Hey guys, it's Albert. I'm back. Jenny's back. Connor's back. Our producer Brandon's back. We're going to kick things off by talking about running back value as it relates to Melvin Gordon and Ezekiel Elliott. We're going to get to all the news of the week. And as always, we'll wrap things up with a six-pack of your Twitter questions. Let's go. All right, welcome back. We are back from our summer hiatus. 2019 season is underway. We'll be going straight through to the Super Bowl. It's the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer. We're still about a week away from things being in full swing. Most teams report to camp next week. And so, as is often the case, what we're hearing about now is contract disputes and teams trying to get their business in order ahead of training camp. And so I wanted to start here with the value of a certain position that I think is going to be in the news over the next couple of weeks, was in the news last year, really from start to finish. It started with Le'Veon Bell's contract dispute in the summer. He sits out the whole year. And then, of course, it comes up again with Todd Gurley getting hurt during the playoffs. He, of course, last summer got a blockbuster deal that got him about $14 million a year, reset the running back market. And so you're going to hear more about what back's worth this, what back's worth that, and the two backs that I think that are going to be in the news this summer, and I think it's pretty obvious that we're going to see this at this point, Chargers running back Melvin Gordon, Cowboys running back Ezekiel Elliott. And I'm going to tell you why these guys aren't created equal. I'm going to tell you why if I were one team, I would very much have to think about rewarding the guy at the top of the market, and if I was the other, I'd probably be really hesitant to do so. I don't think Ezekiel Elliott and Melvin Gordon are on the same level. I personally look at this, and the way we look at most running backs is they're replaceable. And the way you saw Le'Veon Bell replaced by James Conner last year, the way we saw even Todd Gurley being replaced by C.J. Anderson in the playoffs last year, I don't think it's ever been about this player or that player is not very good. I think it's that there's too many good running backs. And what do I mean by that? Well, I think the 2017 draft is a great example of it, right? No one would say the Panthers made a mistake taking Christian McCaffrey with the 8th overall pick, right? Like, very few people would say that. The Panthers don't regret taking Christian McCaffrey that high. Yet, in the 3rd round, you had the offensive rookie of the year, Alvin Kamara, at that position, and you had that year's rushing champion in Kareem Hunt at that position. And so the problem for running backs has never been you're not a good enough player. The problem for running backs has been there's too many of them and it's too easy to replace one. I think Melvin Gordon falls into that category. The Chargers were fine last year when Melvin Gordon was hurt. Doesn't mean Gordon's not a good player, but they had Austin Eckler, they had Jackson, they were fine. They did okay. I think they'd be okay without him this year if he decided to sit out the year. I think it'd be very much like the Steelers situation with James Conner where, you know, Le'Veon Bell's a great player, but the drop-off to James Conner wasn't what sunk the Steelers last year. I think it was other factors. Ezekiel Elliott's different to me. Ezekiel Elliott's different in the same way that Todd Gurley's different, in the same way I think Saquon Barkley has the ability to be different down the line. Now, we haven't seen him win yet, so we don't know, but I look at Ezekiel Elliott as the type of guy who an offense is centered around, and it'd be very hard for the Cowboys to replace what he brings to the table. The same way Todd Gurley propped up Jared Goff as he developed as a quarterback in 2017 and 2018, the same value that Gurley brought to Jared Goff, I think Zeke Elliott brings to Dak Prescott. That doesn't mean I wouldn't be nervous about paying him. Based on all the stuff that is in his background, I think there's certainly reason to be nervous about the idea of giving him a blockbuster deal, because they always say money only makes you more of what you already are. So, yes, I think there would be reason to be nervous about paying Ezekiel Elliott. But based plainly on what he is as a player, I think that the Cowboys, if Zeke Elliott holds out, I think they have to pay him. I think they're going to have to find a way to get that done. Whereas if Melvin Gordon holds out, I don't view that as the same situation at all. And so I'm Jenny, Connor, you guys are back with me. I look at this and I don't think the two guys are the same. I think running back's one of those positions where, again, most of these guys are replaceable. There are very, very few that are unique and different. And I think in this era, it's like the 230-pound guy who can play on all three downs. That's what Zeke is. That's what Gurley is. That's what Barkley is. That's what Bell is. Bell proved to be a little bit more replaceable, but I think there's a very, very small category of elite at that position, and everyone else is replaceable. And part of the reason why isn't because those aren't good players. The guys next to the guys at the next level aren't good players. It's because there are too many good ones that you can replace them with.
I'm not sure I would pay either of them. I do think that Elliott is playing his leverage. I think he knows that the Cowboys want to pay him, and so I think he's smart in playing his leverage. I still don't think I would pay either of them. With Gordon, I don't know what his leverage is here. I think he's misplaying or misreading the situation. I agree that the Chargers have good depth at the running back position. And Gordon has had some injury issues. His production really tailed off late last season. I think he was averaging like 2 yards per carry in the playoffs. So he wasn't really a factor late when they needed him anyway. And I was surprised by his stance. I also am surprised. It seems as though it's a little inconsistent that he might not be. I'm curious how much of it's coming from him, because his agent seemed to be saying something different than he is. They were talking about holding out, demanding a new deal, perhaps a trade, whereas Gordon was saying, well, I want to be a Charger. I'm not going to say I'm not going to be a Charger. So I think that only further undercuts his stance. But in today's NFL, I wouldn't pay either of these guys, especially with Elliott's history off the field.
So here's where I take a kind of like I'll take a little bit of a left-hand turn off of what you said, Jenny. I don't blame either of them for holding out.
If
you're a running back, I think the minute you have leverage, like, you have to do it.
But I just don't know what Gordon's leverage is. I think Elliott has leverage. I don't think Gordon does.
I think Gordon's leverage might be the Chargers are very much in a win now position. They're trying to sell a stadium. That might be it. You know what I mean? Like, it's the position the team is in. It's a very talented team. They were really good last year. And if you're all in for 2019, maybe that puts some pressure on management. We haven't seen their upper management, Tom Telesco, Ed McGuire, their contract negotiator. We haven't seen those guys show any sign that they would bend. But, I mean, this may be the most leverage Melvin Gordon will ever have. Just the fact that they're in a position to win right now, and they're in a fight to sell tickets, to sell suites, to sell that new stadium. And, I mean, Connor, they're way behind in that fight, too.
If there is a person out there listening to this podcast who would go to a Chargers game specifically to see Melvin Gordon, please find me on Twitter. I'll buy you a Melvin Gordon jersey. I just don't
there
believe
it is.
That person exists.
Connor,
there it is.
Don't write checks you can't keep.
The Melvin Gordon one feels a little like just box checking to me, right? Yeah. I mean, if you're his agents, this is what you're his agents for, yeah. Right? It's this moment where you don't want to play on the fifth year option, and so here you are showing your client that I'm doing everything I possibly can, you know, to try to make this work. If I'm the Chargers, I would entertain a trade. If I can get, I went through when I wrote about this for the Morning Huddle the other day, I just went through all the NFL teams and any team in contention that I think could use an upgrade at running back, and I counted about half a dozen teams, six teams.
So who are they?
Off the top of my head, I think the Colts could use an upgrade at running back. Mm-hmm. I think whatever the Bills are doing, they have Frank Gore and LeSean McCoy, but, you know, I think that Melvin Gordon would fit there. The Texans, I think Melvin Gordon would fit well there. If I'm the Jaguars, I'm trading for Melvin Gordon, you know, and pairing him with Leonard Fournette because Tom Coughlin plans on running the ball 90% of the time anyway. Let's see. Who
that
else
would be a record, I think.
I think you've named only AFC teams.
Uh-oh.
Colts, Texans, Jags. Is that all?
So far.
You're also just going through one division here.
Here's the issue, though.
AFC South. Melvin Gordon, welcome to the AFC South. You want to throw the Titans in there?
So here's the issue with that, though. Like, the other issue is what you're asking the other team to do, right? Like, and in this situation, you're asking the team, because I'm assuming a team's not going to fork over a premium draft pick unless they have him for more than just this year, right?
Right.
So then you're talking about asking the other team.
You have to
team,
wait for an injury, right?
And, yeah, I mean, you're asking the other team, give me a second round pick, let's say it is,
it's
right?
It's going to have to
and
be,
then,
right?
And then you have to turn, because it's got to be higher than a three, you would think, right? Okay, so give me a second round pick, plus then you've got to pay him, because that's what this is all about to begin with, right? Like, who's going
to
do that?
Unless you're Melvin Gordon, where you want a chance to, I mean, you know, Melvin Gordon, I think, saw what the running backs behind him were capable of. You know, certainly the reception totals were skewed and everything like that. If you, maybe it's about also putting yourself in a better position too, right? Where you know that you can have a better season this year on a contending team, and then you're just driving your market price up for next year, because that's really what this is all about at this point anyway, right?
Well, you could do that for the Chargers.
True.
Yeah, if you're gonna just play out the contract, right?
That's true. I guess I'm saying like the running backs behind him played fairly well too. So maybe that if
well, I mean like then it would be like so then it would be like that just the Chargers trading him, like just without like conditions from Gordon on it. Just like, hey, we're gonna trade you this running back, and then the other team would be like, well, he's gonna show up.
I mean, you'd have to have some assurances from him.
It's just hard.
I'm not saying it's a fully baked idea, Albert. Like you said, we're just getting back from
vacation. We're workshopping it.
We're slapping it around in the green room.
I don't blame these guys at all. Like, I think Melvin Gordon.
I'm just talking about playing leverage here. I don't know what it is.
Melvin Gordon probably should have held out last year. Like, if you think about it, like, probably should have held out last year. Like, I think these guys should, in a lot of cases, if these guys prove they're good players, I think Le'Veon Bell's biggest problem was he held out too late. Like, he played that 1 year on the franchise tag. Okay, now you're 5 years in and going into year six. Like, I think Le'Veon Bell coming off of his third year is much more attractive than Le'Veon Bell coming off of his fifth year, just based on the lifespan of that position, right? So I think these guys almost... I mean, if there's any mistake here, I think it's Gordon didn't do it last year.
I think all good players should hold out every year.
I think especially Aaron Rodgers should hold out every year. Because I think the thing is, like with running backs, so much of your prime's eaten up on the rookie contract, right? Other positions, you're like, there are a lot of other positions, you're entering your prime when your rookie contract's expiring, right? Like with the running back, you're like in the middle of your prime, and there's a decent chance that. Devontae Freeman's a good example. He hasn't been the same since they did that deal. They did it after 3 years.
That's what I'm saying. Just let him play out the rookie deal, tag him twice, and move on. Yeah. You know, get all the good years out of the running back. I mean, I'm super down on paying them after what we've seen with Gurley, because Gurley was the most explosive talent of his age group. And he's had some injury issues, and not every player is the same in that regard, but I think this should give every team pause. And then, like you said, listen, if Elliott didn't have the off the field stuff, perhaps it's a slightly, I mean, it sounds like the Cowboys want to pay him. So I think he is applying pressure wisely. And I don't blame Gordon. I don't see from an outsider perspective what Gordon's leverage is.
The off the field stuff is a factor with Elliott, no question about it. Like you said, just as a player, if you can remove that and you can't remove it, like if you're the Cowboys, you can't remove it. But if you do remove it and we're going to play that game, I think Elliott's the kind of player who just makes everybody better. And there aren't very many of those.
Do you guys think, I think this is an interesting question to ask off that is, you know, with running backs, do you think Le'Veon Bell's performance this year, however it goes, would impact people's willingness to sit out for an entire season moving forward? Like if he comes out and looks fantastic and well rested, does that give Ezekiel Elliott or a person coming up in his position the green light to say, well, screw it, I'll sit out a season?
I still
two.
Think there's like a supply and demand thing there, like right, like so we come if Le'Veon has a if Le'Veon Bell has a great year, and then, you know, like DeAndre Swift from Georgia or whoever, like all these guys, like all of a sudden it turns out that next year's running back class is really solid, you know, then, you know, say Gordon makes it to the market next year, Gordon still might not get paid because teams are going to look at it and say, well, we'll just wait a month and a half and get a running back with no NFL tread on the tire instead of taking on a guy who has 5 years of wear and tear.
Also, rarely would a player be in a Bell situation where he would not sign his tag and had already been tagged the year before, so it would be too expensive to tag him again. Rarely can you sit out and be pretty assured that you'd be free the next year. Gordon would not be free, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's a different calculus here.
I also want, and like the last thing I also wonder if like the NBA is starting to have a little bit of an effect on the way the players are thinking. We saw what Antonio Brown did, where he was able to successfully force a trade. And I think like because teams have so much leverage in the NFL that forever, like the idea of demanding a trade was never, I think for a lot of players, just not real, you know? And we've seen lots of NBA players do it with like 2 years left on their deals now. And these guys don't live in a vacuum. You know, they see what's happening in other sports. And so there are very few players that can pull it off in the NFL. Antonio Brown was able to pull it off. But I wonder if there's like a little bit of a trickle down there where maybe Antonio Brown was affected a little bit by what he saw in the NBA and thinking to himself, well, I don't need to be held to the rest of this contract. And maybe other players see Antonio Brown do it and they're like, it's worth a shot, right? Like, it's worth a shot. Maybe there's another team out there that loves me and is willing to give me the contract now, so it's worth a shot to try this.
There are John Grudens everywhere, right?
All right. With that, we're going to move on to our news items of the week. I actually wrote these. It's not Connor. I wish we'd had the time to kind of organize. It's been a little bit of a fire drill this week anyway. We're going to start with news topic number one. The NFL and NFLPA will meet for 3 days this week to discuss a new collective bargaining agreement. The sides met in April, May, and June as they try to avoid a work stoppage in 2021. Before we get to the thing I really want to talk about here, I think one thing that's important to remember, there's been a lot of talk about the revenue split. I think this year, this one's going to be a little more complicated than the last one. The way they did the last one, and this was really kind of the brainchild of Clark Hunt, who's the Chiefs owner, he put together this plan where the owners would take a much bigger percentage of the digital money and the players would get a bigger percentage of the TV money. And this was in 2011. So at the time, the digital money wasn't going to be all that significant, right? If they roll that back and they do the same thing again, well, now we're talking about the new broadcast deals coming up. You could have Netflix. You could have Hulu. You could have DAZN, whatever it is. Like, the digital rights now could wind up being pretty significant. And so there are a lot of things from that standpoint that I think that they've got to work out, which is, I mean, the biggest piece of this, which is how you split up the revenue. That said, I think the most interesting thing that we've all been talking about the last couple of weeks is the idea, again, of going to 18 games, which I don't think is going to happen, which I think is probably just the NFL owners deciding they want to create a chip out of nothing. Like why not like just kind of put this on the table so we can take it off the table? But the idea of playing 16 games or making players eligible for 16 games and then playing an 18-game schedule, I think, is as asinine as it gets.
It doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to me. I think that's a great point about sort of planting something and having players get worked up about the 18 games, and then you feel like you're seeding on that, you know, and maybe they'll take that as a win. I still like the 19-week season with 17 games, two byes,
yeah.
And you reduce the preseason in half. So in exchange for having the extra game, players get a second bye week. That could help you eliminate the short Sunday to Thursday turnaround. You also reduce the preseason, which nobody likes. I still don't know if players would be game for that, but that to me is a decent compromise. You know, Mark Murphy has talked publicly recently about the idea of the 17 games, and then you make that 17th game a neutral site game, either so international like or domestic, or that teams aren't giving up home games to play in London, although the Jaguars do like that arrangement because of the gate revenues. But, you know, I think that's an interesting idea. I don't know. We haven't heard much about it. It seems like a reformatting of the season is unlikely.
It's always interesting to me when we talk about cutting down the preseason, and you know, I always just wonder if it's one of those deals where are you still harming sort of like the lower and middle class like they were in the first CBA indirectly, where I do think that cutting down practice time is great and cutting down the violence of practice is great, but then kind of washed into that was that whole narrative over the last decade of, well, you know, there's a ton of people who aren't prepared to play and that aren't good enough to play, and then thus down the road, you know, can't create a living for themselves in the NFL. And, you know, I think it's going to be interesting to see if they're willing to get creative about, you know, maybe exceptions for younger people that want to practice more, or younger people that need more time with the coaches or anything like that. I mean, that would be something that certainly I would be at least interested in hearing somebody put down a proposal and say, you know, hey, there's a little bit of a crisis here to the point where people are lining up to create developmental leagues to fill a niche. Yeah. When we could just nip this in the bud right now.
So you're saying like you maybe create, and I know this has been discussed, but like create it like where maybe there's an extra 5 weeks of the off-season program that's only for players with 4 years experience or less, or
4 years
like
or less, and it's not mandatory, but right. The coaches can get their hands on them, you know,
yeah.
and there's no restrictions there or anything right. like that, and you know, see if they.
I mean, I hear the coaches on one end on this, which is like, it's weird that like a guy wants to get better at his job and literally, like, has access to the best in the field, like, to help him get better. And can't use that access as much as he wants. You know what I mean? Like he wants to work extra and he can't use the access that he has to these people. Like, so, like, I understand their side of the argument there, that like these are very competitive people who want to get better, who have to like go and hire personal coaches now and do different things to get themselves ready to play. The flip side of that is it's sort of the coach's fault for abusing it in the first place.
Correct.
You know, and so like that's the double side of this. Like that the coaches bear some responsibility.
Who's the
to.
Most notorious like abuser of that power? Like who is the guy who really got
into
deep in the weeds?
I mean, like there's like
the
subtle. I mean, I would say back in the day it was probably Belichick, but they're very
B squared. Yeah.
They're very careful about the rules now. I don't know. I mean, like I feel like there's always pressure on those guys though, because it's like there's no way to make that stuff totally voluntary, because I mean, for the top five players in the team, it's like, yeah, they can blow it off. You know, but if you're the 70th guy in the roster, you have to show up to OTAs.
Right.
You know, because like otherwise, like it's not like the coaches aren't going to remember that. And beyond just that, like you may be less prepared for training camp then, and that could put you at a disadvantage to try to win a job. And so there's a competitive element to this that it sort of self-regulates, you know? So anyway, I don't like the 18-game thing just because – I mean, the 16-game thing to me is asinine, just because
16 out of 18.
16
right.
out of 18. That to me, like, what about like how are the networks going to feel if you're sitting your quarterback? Like, how is NBC going to feel if you're sitting your quarterback on Sunday Night Football?
Deal with it, because people will watch.
Right.
This is what drives me nuts. People watch the
what happens
damn
the,
Pro Bowl.
All right. So what happens the first time that you're sitting two offensive linemen and your quarterback gets hurt?
I mean, I see the offensive lineman situation. And I think the solution probably, but wouldn't you just have the backup play behind the backup O-line?
Right, but then you're talking about having like almost like a split squad spring training game situation with some of their games. And to me, that's the NFL talking out of both sides of their mouth, because if they're talking about like, well, we want to take away two preseason games because the quality of the game is no good. Right. If they're saying that on one side, you can't say on the other side, well, okay, like let's water down the regular season, right?
Right.
If they really want it to be a premium product, the best players need to be out there.
It feels a little bit too convoluted to me.
Yeah.
The
I just think
only
it's
play
too
16
much.
Situation.
That's why that's why I think it's like that's why it's like to me it almost has to be a chip, right? Like almost have. And I'm with you as far as the two buys. I think that makes the most sense if they really want to add inventory.
And if you're gonna cut down the preseason guys, open up training camps. Seriously, to the public. Let them see training camp practices.
It's weird that they won't.
More joint training camp practices available to everyone that wants to see them who can't afford to go to
I love that idea. I think turning training camp, like turning the joint practices into almost like what, like a.
It's more built for audiences anyway. You get to see the one-on-ones
right.
and you get to see all the stuff that people want to see anyway.
Have you guys ever been to I've covered a couple of these, like a high school jamboree that they have like during. So like high school, like.
You're asking if we've ever been to a jamboree?
No, high school football jamboree.
I've heard of those. Like, they have them in, like, Alabama with, like Julio Jones, I feel like, when he was in high school.
Yeah, it'll be, like, in the preseason. So what they'll do is, so, you know, it'll be, like, they're preseason games, like, and there'll be scrimmages, but there'll be a bunch of teams there at once, and this team will play a half against that team.
Okay.
So it's, like, and there'll be multiple fields, and there's sort of, like, I've covered a couple of those in the past where it's like just like it's an environment, and we didn't have those in Massachusetts, but I've seen them in other parts of the country. Like I think you could do that with the joint practices, where you could almost make it like a festival, like a football festival, you know, and you could have the NFL experience type stuff, and you could do a ton of cool stuff with it. Which to me, I don't know about you guys, like I think that'd be a much better take than a preseason game, right?
Yeah, I mean,
you get to see players one-on-ones. You get to see like there's so much stuff you get to see that you wouldn't get to see anywhere else.
I've seen one good NFL preseason game in this will be my 10th season covering the NFL coming up.
Was Tim Tebow involved?
No, I've seen one good NFL preseason game: Jets Giants 2010, the birth of Victor Cruz.
Victor Cruz, yeah.
That,
and he was wearing like number three, wasn't he?
Quarterback was Jim Sorgi.
Nice.
And he was just dropping dimes.
Nice. Okay, who wants to take news item number two?
I got it. The deadline for franchise tag players came and went on Monday, with only Jadeveon Clowney remaining without a long-term deal among the six who were tagged 5 months ago. Both 49ers kicker Robbie Gould and Falcons defensive tackle Grady Jarrett got their new deals on the day of the deadline. Good on the Falcons. I think that was a I think that was a nice deal.
Yeah, I think it's a sign that, like, one of the reasons that I thought that this was an interesting topic is we all, like, hem and haw over the franchise tag. Is it that big a deal? I mean, like, five of the six guys got new contracts. Like, we always talk about this, like, as if, like, it's something the players need to get rid of. If I was the players, I'd be way more concerned about making it easier to get to free agency for everyone.
No, like, yeah, I mean, it's like, this is affects even fewer players than the personal conduct policy.
Right.
So it's hard to see it ever being a negotiation priority.
Yeah, I mean, I think what it does is, like, and again, I'm making another NBA comparison here, but it's like max contracts in the NBA, where it, like, limits the, it restricts the top of the market. And the difference is, in the NBA, of course, you can move team, you can change teams, but the max contracts in the NBA restrict the top of the market. So it sort of helps guys on the next level get paid, helps other guys make it to free agency. And so I don't know that the franchise tag, as much hemming and hawing as we've done over it, is necessarily that bad a thing for the players. Either you get one big lump sum and then it's hard for them to tag you again, or you get paid. Now, I think with running back is again the exception, because the dynamic of the position is different and everything else. But if Clowney goes out and has a great year this year, he's going to collect $16 million now and get a new deal next year.
I think the franchise tag is crummy, but like I said, I don't foresee it going anywhere, because it's really hard to make that a priority.
I just don't think it's that big a deal.
I think it's crummy, too, in the fact that, like, what they're doing, and, like, fighting Jadeveon Clowney on, like, $1 million
that's,
because of
yeah,
the
but
position.
That's,
you know,
that's,
I mean, that's just, but it's just, like, another, it's another element of control that they exact. And I think to bring up your NBA point, they're sort of shooting themselves in the foot there, because what is the best part about NBA now? It's rapid movement, right?
Yeah.
Fan bases want, you know, and we've seen this with points in the NFL too, a majority of these fans, I feel, want to manipulate what they see in video games or in their imagination, which is like, wouldn't it
players,
be cool if
yeah.
Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry played together? Like, yeah, awesome. And now it happened. And so I think any restriction of that flow, you know, people don't care about the hometown player anymore. That's not a thing, I don't think,
so
as much.
This is like, I don't think you're ever going to get rid of the franchise tags because of quarterbacks, right? Would it make sense to just have one franchise tag number? Like, if you're the players, would you ask for that?
And it's $75 million.
It's just, it's the quarterback number. So, like, that way, like, because the idea of this in the first place was Pat Bowlen was worried that he was going to lose John Elway when they put in free agency. That was the genesis of the franchise tag, right? So, if you tag a guy, like, make it hurt, make him pay the quarterback number, and then it really does become like either four quarterbacks, or because we're going to hold a guy over for a year and he's definitely making it to free agency the next year. Like, that could be a potential solution, where it's like, now it really has to be a franchise player for you to do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Back to the clowning situation with the linebacker tag, is there any way he doesn't win that grievance? It seems like all he would have to do is present the number of snaps that he played defensive line versus linebacker and show that it is wildly skewed.
Yeah.
So you would think
it's
so.
It's like 65-35. It's so like not even close.
You would think so, but I remember Jimmy Graham lost one of these, didn't he?
But wasn't he challenging to be
a receiver, right? But he was standing up. Like his numbers were like that. Like, you would think, like, I'm with you. You would think Clowney would win, like, pretty easily based on the up versus down argument. But I remember Jimmy Graham losing his. I might be wrong, Connor, if you want to, I don't know if you're looking that up now, but Jimmy Graham, I think Jimmy Graham, like, the numbers were wildly skewed, like, where he was up 70% of the time, and he still wound up losing his grievance.
The classification of linebacker is just so problematic.
Yeah.
Right.
It comes up with all pro voting. It comes
right
up with so many different
It's why
things.
Like CJ it's why CJ Mosley made it to the market, because all those guys are edge rushers that are so the number was too high for CJ Mosley. So that's why CJ Mosley made it to the market.
It's just a very awkward combination of things, like my lunch plates usually. You know, things that just aren't the same lumped into one category.
Okay.
High bar.
Low bar.
We got a good one for number three. I was actually excited about this one.
I'm excited to read it. Speaking with clickondetroit.com.
Whoa.
Whoa.
COD.
New Giants receiver Golden Tate said that Matthew Stafford is the best quarterback I've played with. This guy, the guy can flat out
play. I dropped a word there. That's my
bad. He's tough and his attitude is amazing and he just wants to play ball. That's a trigger for Connor. Play ball, talk ball.
Yeah.
Tate, of course, won a Super Bowl
in Seattle.
In Seattle. Wow, with Russell Wilson. Wow. Albert really just made a lot of errors in this.
That's why I mean
he just was distracted by clickondetroit.com, which what is it?
I need Connor to take back over. That's what I need. I need him to take over the writing on that. I like there are so many good elements to this because it's not just a shot. It's not just like a guy grinding an old axe. It's also like if you look exactly at what he said, like it's you parse everything here is like, okay, so is he saying that Russell isn't tough? Is he saying that Russell's attitude isn't amazing? Is he saying that Russell doesn't want to just play ball? So I just thought this was hilarious because it's very, very, very clear what he's trying to do here.
You know, on one hand, I mean, it's a nice thing to say about Matt Stafford, but also this is just the piling on of Russell Wilson feels borderline ridiculous to me at this point.
That's what I enjoy about this, though, is that it's ridiculous.
It's just like everybody that leaves the team is like, this guy's an asshole. And if that's true, that's fine. But, you know, go play somewhere else. And they all have. And you know, you haven't won a Super Bowl.
I thought, like honestly, and you're right. Like, I think it's, you know... And I wonder when this is going to end. Like, I wonder if there's some sort of reconciliation down the line, because that Seattle team, like that organization, hadn't won a Super Bowl before. They went to 2-1-1 with that group of players, and I know that like for a lot of those players, the feeling is, oh well, we should have won more, we should have done more, and we were torn apart before, torn apart before our time and everything else. And for one reason or another, they all seem to point the finger at him.
I mean, they tore themselves apart.
That's right. Exactly. My last point on this, I don't know why I'm like getting mad about now. We've turned like a fun thing into like a referendum on like the 2013 Seahawks. Yeah. But like all the things that have come out, like if Russell Wilson was really that bad, that he alone tore apart this generational talent, then give me hard reasons why. Like, okay, he was a management stooge. What does that mean? What did he do? You know, how did he make you angry? Because if not, if it's like, oh, well, they just liked him better than us, then deal with it. This happens in every workplace in every state in America.
I think it was about it's about the most simple. It was about credit, which is kind of seems childish, but I think happens in every workplace, right?
Yeah, deal with it. Oh my God.
I mean, you hear some of the other things that go on in other places with people throwing other, you know, teammates under the bus, you know, serious allegations against quarterbacks like Ben Roethlisberger. Mm-hmm. I mean, I agree, Connor. The stuff with Russell seems like another level of petty, and it just sounds like a bunch of guys didn't like each other and there were a lot of egos and they all kind of saw their stars rising at the same time. Maybe that was part of it too. Like there was this young core and they were all sort of vying for fame at the same time.
I think timing was an element too, probably, right? Because a lot of those guys were there before Russell. Because Russell got there in 12, right? So you already had there Golden Tate, Doug Baldwin, Richard Sherman, Cam Chancellor, Earl Thomas, Bobby Wagner. Bobby Wagner came the same year as Russ. But I think that might be part of it too, is that they built it up and he was sort of the last piece that brought it together. I think Russell Wilson's a fantastic player who, to some degree, was maybe a victim of circumstance here too. Like it would have been tough for any rookie quarterback to go into that locker room and earn the respect of everybody that quickly.
Put Matt Flynn under center in 2013 and tell me what happens.
Yeah, I'm with you, Connor. Now, on another angle, We're not. Is anyone discussing that this might be a shot at Eli Manning or Daniel Jones?
Oh, give me that! Give me that!
What about your current quarterback, Golden Tate? That.
Oh, there it is. There. All right, Connor, the floor is yours.
Yes. Oh, good job, Jenny.
I was surprised Connor didn't mention it. I was waiting, and it looked like he was petering out on the topic, so I just took the opportunity.
I think that maybe what Golden was feeling was sort of the local pull. When you're on with Click on Detroit, obviously you have to be Detroit forward,
right?
I don't know. Have we heard a lot of overwhelming positivity or negativity towards playing with Matthew? This is like one of the first times that I've seen a defected player really reflect on Matthew Stafford personally. Like, he might be a great guy, and we just don't know. Or, you know,
I think he is. Like, I just don't think that there's. You don't hear many players say much about him, period.
At all, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you just don't. I mean, maybe that part of that's a product of playing for the Lions, and there's not that it's...
Nobody cares.
Yeah, I mean, like, that might be it. I mean, there's nothing to argue with over, right? Like, he's been pretty good.
Yeah.
He's been pretty good. Like, they made the playoffs talented, a couple times. He's talented.
I mean,
I don't think he's a bad guy. Like, he's... Yeah,
I would take him in New York right now in a cocaine heartbeat.
Oh, I think you'd wait.
Wow.
Golden Tate, I would be. If the Giants said we're trading Eli Manning.
Just trying to process
not just,
this.
Not just a heartbeat.
You never heard that? Unfamiliar that with.
I haven't heard a cocaine heartbeat.
Heartbeat. It's just like,
it
really
makes
fast
sense.
Heartbeat.
It
yeah.
makes sense.
It's like a New York minute.
It's like a New York minute. It's a faster New York minute.
Okay.
But if Golden Tate became like assistant GM tomorrow, and they said we'll give you Matthew Stafford for Daniel Jones and Eli Manning,
oh, I'd do it.
I'd do it.
I'd do. I mean, hell yeah. I think Matthew Stafford. I will say this. I think Matthew Stafford, like, has done pretty well considering his circumstances over the course of 10 years now, and I think you'd find out that the NFL thinks maybe more highly of him than the public does if he were ever to become available.
I agree. Would you do it? Would you do that deal? Eli and DJ for Matthew Stafford?
I don't know. I have to mull on that one.
Let's come back to it at the end.
We'll come back to it at the end. Okay. Okay. So our fake trade is now in play, and GM Jenny Prentiss is
on the clock.
It's coming off the table. It's coming off the table in about 15 minutes, Jenny. news topic number 4. Okay, Tyreek Hill's situation remains up in the air with a week left until camp. The NFL has been investigating, and the Chiefs have been following the league's lead. I think we've all made our feelings on the situation itself clear. I think this is wholly about how good a player Tyreek Hill is. That's why he's been given leeway by the Chiefs. That's why he hasn't been cut. That's why I think that the league has been so judicious with this. I do think it's interesting, and I think it was Mike Florio that pointed this out. I do think it's interesting that Richie Incognito's situation was resolved before this one was, because it would seem like that situation might take a little bit more. It seems like that situation wouldn't be, because he wasn't on a team. Might okay. not be as much. He wasn't on a team for such a long time, and I think most of us assumed that he'd be out of the league. Like, the league's had more time with the Tyreek Hill situation, right? And so you would think that that would be sort of the one that maybe they would have adjudicated first. I wonder if Richie getting just 2 games based on what happened with him is a sign that Tyreek Hill isn't going to get like a season-long suspension or something that we would consider in any way severe. I might be wrong, but I know the league is sometimes cognizant of these sorts of things, and I wonder if the fact that Richie only got 2 games is a precursor to Tyreek Hill getting something a little lighter than we might all expect.
This one is such a tough one to predict.
Yeah.
I honestly have no idea how it will shake out. Sorting through the information is a Herculean task, even for the district attorney, yeah. right? I mean, the district attorney said he felt that a crime had occurred involving their son, but he couldn't determine who had committed that crime. And now you're asking the NFL to sort through the same information. I still think the information that we have meets a minimum threshold for a 6-game suspension, which is supposed to be the baseline.
Yep.
You know, there was enough information or concern for the child to be removed from their care. And you know, we have him threatening his fiance on tape, which they have suspended people for threatening language before. Threatened violence is one of the stipulations in the personal conduct policy. So you might be right, Albert. And that what you said, honestly, yes, it does make sense because the NFL does try to set things up like that. Like that is something that they would take into account, mm-hmm. but it I don't think it should be that way. You know, I think
it is.
Yeah. I think their situation has met the minimum baseline here. And I don't think the longer tape in any way changed my view of the situation. You know, you hear her pressing, his fiance pressing him on, well, where did the bruises come in 2014? He's the one who brings it up, right? And he doesn't know he's being recorded. I understand that. But the police report in 2014, if you go back and look at it, like, you know, that to me was pretty clear. Like, there were bruises. There was clear physical evidence that an assault had occurred. So it's very hard for me to understand some of the questioning of that years later based off of this recording.
It's so interesting because, like, I was thinking about, well, what's the obvious situation that the NFL isn't thinking of? And I was like, you know, because it's still under active investigation by the Department of Family Services, right?
Right.
And so
right.
I was like, well, okay, just wait, put him in a holding pattern and allow this department, which is why they're there, to conduct a thorough investigation. And until then, he's not seen on the field. But then it's like, are you putting undue pressure on this organization, which has hundreds of cases, I'm sure, like this? And are you taking away resources from other families that need them? And, you know, are you in any way hamstringing this local organization and putting too much pressure on them? And so I just think this is such a difficult business that the NFL has gotten itself into. And now I think you're running the risk of rushing out a punishment when there's a far more thorough investigation being conducted that's already rooted in something that began before yours did.
Yeah.
I mean, at some point the timeline changed, right? And we don't really know why. Like, they had Roger Goodell said in May that they would wait till the CPS investigation was concluded. And then all of a sudden the news came out that they were meeting with Hill in Kansas City. So I don't know why the timeline changed. We don't have clarity on that at this point,
right.
Do we?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's, and I don't understand why they don't. Now, I know they've used, like, well, we don't do it during the off season as a crutch, but why, I don't understand why they haven't just put them on the exempt list. And there's just, their handling of this has been very, very, I know these are sticky cases. I know they're hard to investigate. I know all of that. It just, it seems like the I don't know any other word to use, but weird. Like, it just feels like the whole handling of this has been weird. And it, you hate to say it, but it's like shades of Ray Rice, where I think, like, we, you know, the league and the Ravens were just sort of hoping it would go away, you know, and then it didn't go away.
Right.
And then it got a lot worse. And then the situation, like, turned into an enormous, like an enormous, enormous thing. Like, it just, if there's a part of me that wonders, are the Chiefs just sort of hoping that this, like, goes away? Like, because they're in Kansas City. I don't know that you could carry Tyreek Hill on your roster in 2019 if you were in New York or you were in Philly or you were in Washington or you were in Boston. They're in Kansas City. Like, it's just, there's part of me that wonders, are they just going to are they hoping that this is just going to sort of, like, we're all going to forget about it once the season starts?
They are, and it's a sign of the time. You know, it's just, you know, so many times people have been presented with situations where they could do the right thing and they don't. And so this is one of those situations where, hey, it might benefit you to hope it goes away, but, you know, you wear that for the long term. So.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't feel like a coincidence that the full recording came out. Now, you know, obviously it should have been released in full at the beginning, mm-hmm. but it felt like that was someone from the Chiefs or the NFL saying, like, hey, look, like, consider this other side. Like, maybe he didn't even do the thing in 2014. And I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, almost they're preparing to announce something that,
yes,
people are going to be.
That's what it felt like.
They're getting ready to announce, like, we're giving him 4 games or we're giving him 6 games. And that's preparation for that.
That's how I felt.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Last news item for the week. Jenny, Connor, whoever wants it.
The wife of Redskins quarterback Alex Smith posted an update on her husband's health on Instagram Monday. Instagram, the hub of NFL news, showing
that
he is, after 8 months, now shedding the external fixator he wore to stabilize his broken leg. He's still expected to miss the 2019 season. I mean, but still good. I mean, yeah. That was just another, like Teddy Bridgewater, just brutal. And,
yeah.
You know, you hope if they want to continue their careers and, you know, that's something that they're excited about doing, that's great. And if not, I don't think anyone would blame them either. I mean, it's good that he's gotten used to, we heard those interviews that he gave about just how dire and how scary that situation was for a minute.
I mean,
and it's good to see that, you know, he's going to be able to make a full recovery.
Yeah, I mean, it's like it was Joe Theismann. I mean, I was too young to, and I don't think you guys were alive, right? Like I was
right.
Yeah, I was very very
what year
young.
Was that?
I think 83.
You were alive in 1983.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I was 3 years old. Huh?
Oh, it was 87. Oh,
Brandon, you got a mic over there? Oh no, you don't. You don't. Okay. Our producer Brandon, can we get clarification real quick?
1987.
All right, so all right, I was so there alive. It is. Sorry, I thought it was earlier than that.
You were an infant?
I was three.
You were three.
Still
okay.
Glimmer in my dad's eye. Ugh.
Yeah, I was.
Thanks for the correction, Brandon.
I was actually in elementary school. So
wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Jeez.
So, what year do you guys think I was born?
Well, 1980.
Okay.
You just said you were three.
Oh,
in 1983.
Three? We're all getting back into the swing of things here. Good for Alex Smith.
Yeah.
Like I'm glad everybody now knows how old I am, how old I'll be next year, which is a unfortunate milestone year for me. But yeah, I didn't realize you didn't know I was that old.
I think it's the crisp vacation tan.
There it is.
You look young. You know, I think.
Correction, 85.
Okay, so split the difference.
Split the 85.
I was one.
Did he win a Super Bowl in 83? Is that what I'm thinking of?
Yes.
Okay.
Before we go though.
Yep,
GM Prentice isn't off the clock.
This trade's coming off the table, Jenny. You got to make a decision.
I'm sticking with my guy Daniel Jones.
Wow. Now is the rookie contract coming to play?
Yeah,
there?
Lots of reasons. Age, rookie contract. I'm betting on Daniel Jones. I might be the only one in the New York market outside of Dave Gettleman.
That you've like not kind
Just
of
got Gettleman's
subtly
back.
Dug in the Jones camp, and that's good. I think that's good.
You guys can call me out in four months.
No, but I have a bad feeling that everyone except for Jenny is going to be very wrong about. You know what I mean? Like I think it feels good right now. But it's one of those like short-term things where all of our Daniel Jones takes are going to be dug up if we're still allowed free access.
Wait,
to so the
you're saying
in
like Daniel
years.
Jones is not Daniel Jones is going to be?
I think he's going to be good.
You think he's going
to
be good?
And if there's a free internet in 10 years, people will be able to look back at what we wrote and be like,
was the back page of the Post or the Daily News where it was like Blues Clueless and it had like Gettleman in the back page. Like so, there's going to be a lot of. Like a lot of fodder for freezing cold takes, right? Like a lot of fodder for people who hold on to these sorts of things and throw them back in people's faces. So good for those people. Good for Daniel Jones and good for those people.
Well, according to a friend that sent us a text that the next asteroid to hit Earth will be in 2027. So 10 years from now, we might not have to worry about these freezing cold takes. Although I would say 2027 would be far enough to determine whether or not Jones was a success.
He'll be nine years into a powerhouse career.
Powerhouse career. A couple Super Bowls, you know. The bridge to Arch Manning.
The Mara family already has eyes on Arch, I think.
God.
All right. Thanks, guys. We'll jump right into the six-pack. You guys know how this works. Every week, I put the call out for questions on Twitter. I pick six. If I pick yours, you get a like. That means I hit the little heart there on the Twitter machine, and you get an answer here. Question number one from Pedro Augusto. That's @_PedroAugusto99. What are your expectations for the 2018 QB class in 2019? Look, I think we saw a lot of good things from the group in general. Baker Mayfield, I think, has an opportunity to have a Pat Mahomes, Carson Wentz type of leap in year two. I think Sam Darnold's going to be solid under Adam Gase. The environment in Buffalo around Josh Allen's gotten better. They invest in the offensive line, bringing in Mitch Morse and Ty Nishiki. They invested in the receiver position, bringing in Cole Beasley and John Brown. They've got a better environment around Josh Allen, so he's got a chance. Josh Rosen, I think, is a real wild card. And then Lamar Jackson, I think, is going to depend. A lot of that's going to depend on health, but he was able to get the Ravens to the playoffs last year. Question number two from Caleb Sutherland. That's at Caleb Sutherland. Do you think the league will ever get rid of the franchise tag, or will players have to figure out how to use it the best way, like Cousins and Bell did? I think Cousins did use it the best way. I don't think Bell did. I think Bell sort of, I would say Bell got in over his skis a little bit. And to me, like, the best deal he could have taken was the Steelers deal a year ago. He would have been a year younger, I think, would have been a better chance to capitalize on his prime. Bottom line is that I don't think the franchise tag is going anywhere. And it's not, the owners obviously don't want to get rid of it because it's a way of constraining salaries. I don't think it's that big a deal to the players. Like, I just think it's more important to the players, and historically it's been more important to the players to take care of the rank and file and take care of, you know, the 30th and 40th guy on the roster. And if there's one gain they can get, I would say it would be a much bigger gain to get guys to free agency after 3 years instead of four. If you could find a way to do that, get more guys to free agency after 3 years, you'd be helping everybody. To me, the franchise tag just affects so few people. And again, we said it with Jenny and Connor, 5 out of 6 of the guys who were tagged this year wound up getting long-term deals. Maybe they didn't get quite as much as they got in the market, but they were all handsomely rewarded. And so, no, I don't think the franchise tag is going anywhere. Question number three from Pat Patriot. That's at DTHACH978. Can Mahomes duplicate last year's success with no Hunt and possibly no Hill for the majority of the season? I don't know if Hill will be gone for a majority of the season. Obviously, Kareem Hunt's gone. I think Mecole Hardman is a very interesting player they're bringing into the fold. They also have to replace Chris Connolly. Look, there's no question there's more on Patrick Mahomes now. Based on talking to people there and the spring that Pat Mahomes had, he's put himself in position to have a very, very good second year. And I would argue, or third year, second year as a starter, and I'd argue that much more of what he was able to do, it wasn't about the receivers so much, and they've got great explosive receivers. And Sammy Watkins had a really strong spring too. A lot of it's about that offensive line. And if they can, you know, find a way to replace Mitch Morris and they can be as good on the offensive line, I think he'll be just fine. In a lot of cases, what Patrick Mahomes has been about, you know, helping him create back there, helping him by creating time for him and creating time for the offense to get the ball downfield. And so I think Mahomes is in a good position to repeat what he did last year. Whether or not he can repeat the numbers, I mean, a lot of that's dependent on circumstances and everything else. But I think what you saw last year was pretty real. Question number four from Brandon Silva. That's at Brando_Puma. Welcome back. With the rookie wage scale in place, why do rookies like Locke and Jacobs hold out on signing their contract? It seems like leverage is a bit limited based on the scale. There are little things that they can fight over. They can fight over contract language. They can fight over offsets. They can fight over bonus payments. They can fight over a lot of different things, okay? And for the player, it may not mean that much. What it does, who it does mean something for is the agent and the team. The team will have precedents in how they do contracts, and those precedents will carry over to veteran players. And so they don't want to break their precedents to do a rookie deal. And so they'll have precedence in the way that they set up language, the way they set up offsets, the way they set up bonus payment structures, all that different stuff that you guys don't care about. They'll want to stick to those precedents while the agents are fighting against those things because those things are going to be factors in recruiting the next year with the next rookie class. And so really this is about agents and teams. And I really applaud the players who fight in these situations too, because it shows that they're not going to be bullied. We saw it with Joey Bosa 3 years ago. It's not that common, but it does happen. Maybe there'll be a rookie or two who'll hold out this year. We'll see. Question number five, Marco, that's at MarkyBoy2305. How long till soccer, as you call it over there, becomes the biggest sport in the USA? Brandon, what would you say? 100, 200 years?
Probably say 200.
Yeah. I think a big part of who we are as a country, we like to watch the very best. And we've got the very best basketball players here, and we've got the very best football players here, and we've got the very best hockey players and the very best baseball players, at least playing in this country. And we don't have the best soccer players. And I'll tell you, like, a lot of my friends who grew up playing soccer, some of my best friends, you know, one of my best friends was a captain of our high school soccer team. Another one of my really good friends, college soccer player. What do they watch? They don't watch the MLS. they watch the Premier League, they watch the Spanish League, they watch the Italian League. And I think it's going to be really hard for soccer to become that popular in this country when the best level of play, the level of play the real hardcore fan is watching, is overseas. And so I think there are limits to how far soccer can go. And look, soccer was the sport of the future when I was a kid. If it hasn't happened yet, I think you know that there are some limits on how far they can go with the sport. And finally, question number six. This is from Brett Frederick. We'll wrap it up where we started, at @Brett_Frederick. What is Duke Johnson's trade value? I don't think it's a whole lot. He's got an affordable contract, but I don't think he's got great trade value. I understand why he wants out of there. Obviously, he's behind Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb. Tough situation for him. But I don't think his trade value is very good to the point where it's worth it for the Browns to get rid of an affordable layer of depth like they have with him. Appreciate you guys coming out. Appreciate you guys sticking with us through the break. As always, remember to listen to our podcast and all of our other football podcasts, including Connor's Bad Movies football podcast. It's been a fantastic dig over the last couple of months. And Gary and Andy's Monday Morning podcast. You get us all on one podcast feed. Now that's the MMQB NFL podcast. Get us on Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your shows. We also appreciate your feedback. You can get to me on Twitter @AlbertBreer, on Instagram @Albert_Breer, on Facebook @AlbertRBreer. Same time next week. We'll see you guys then.